VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Ruck, everybody. Sports cheating is on every headline, on the lips of everyone talking about the game. And this morning's panel, we've already checked their pockets for signs of cheating. There's no evidence that they've been tampering with the balls, so they're all above reproach. All we've found is a relatively small amount of crack cocaine, the synopsis of The Joy of Silence by Eddie Jones, and 50 Viagra tablets. The panel today, Alex Lowe from The Times. Alex did a superb one-man show in this morning's Times by writing every word in the sport in the sports section. Not many of you know he's the son of Whispering Ted Lowe, the former BBC snooker commentator. Not many people know that. You remember Ted Lowe? He was called Whispering Ted Lowe. He did all those big games between Dennis Taylor, Joe Davis, Steve Davis, Reg Davis, and all that lot. Sam Peters from the Sunday Times is here. Sam's dad, Lenny Peters, was a member of the Peters and Lee duet. If you remember that song, Welcome Home, it didn't suit everybody. It was a bit cabaret, but Lenny Peters, Sam's dad, was going strong. He brought out an album called Unforgettable. Sadly, everybody's forgotten it. And also Adam Hathaway from the People Stable, the king of the freelancers. And obviously, Adam, as a freelance, doesn't always appear under his own name. But you might be interested to know that... David Parsons is Adam, David Rees, Owen Slott, Austin Healy, Enid Blyton, and John Keats are all nom de plumes for Adam Hathaway. Thank you for downloading us. Thank you for listening to us again. Last week we had a pretty big reaction because we told you who shouldn't go on the tour of South Africa, and that was basically everyone we could think of with England. But people said, hang on, you're being destructive here. Who would you take? And our experts here, I'm just going to go around them and just give us a few names of people that you should go or you'd like to go, or even long shots, guys. Let's throw in a few names that Eddie should be considering. Sam, England tour South Africa, 3 tests. Who should they be looking at?
From the weekend's evidence, I thought Lazowski was outstanding for Saracens. Really all-round player, pace, really aggressive defender, lovely footballer, just an all-round game, tenacious, really just I like his game. And also another young lad at Surrey's, Max Malins, I think's coming up on the rails. It might be too early for him this tour, but he's a really, really good player, really organised. So Surrey's have got a couple of really good young playmakers there. They've got a big future.
Arthur?
Well, I can give him a name of a player who definitely won't be picked, which is Chris Ashton. And we all know why he can't be picked. But this weekend he scored his 21st try of the season for Toulon, equaling a league record with 4 matches still to go. He played brilliantly, but obviously he definitely won't go. Those who might go and should go, Ellis Genge just came back from injury for Leicester, came off the bench and was virtually man of the match in a 20-minute performance. Just outstanding, scrummaging. We all know what he can do in the loose. And youngster Jack Willis at Wasps, he came off the bench for Haskell, and I really like the look of him too. So I'd give all those three a nod.
Alex, you're a front row yourself. Ellis Genge is clearly a live wire, but you keep on running into, or one keeps on running into, opposing directors of rugby who say he's not legal in the scrum. Yesterday he looked okay to me. Do you think he's come on in that department?
I think so. Yeah, I do think so. Yesterday he was destructive. He demolished, and the game turned on the 50th minute when Wasps took off Jake Cooper-Woolley, who'd been similarly outstanding, and Leicester brought on Ellis Genge, and the scrum went from Wasps shoving Leicester back to Leicester shoving Wasps off their own ball. And I thought he was legal, and it is an area of the game that some of these kind of athletes who perhaps don't grow up playing prop. Do have to work on Mako's another one. You know, he grew up playing in different parts of the field, and there are specialist. It's a specialist area where they do have to develop. But I thought Ellis looked superb when he came on, and he should definitely go to South Africa.
Adam, just throw a few into the hat for us.
I'll have to sort of spike my guns a bit. I've got Jake Cooper-Willian, and I've written down Wasp scrum went to pot when he went off. Also, Tom Curry came off the bench for Sale, first game for 5 months on Saturday after his hand injury. Eddie's keen to have another look at him. And a bit left field, wouldn't mind taking an attack coach to South Africa, because it's been a bit of a nightmare. Now, either, I know Ben Kay in the Times put up Daryl Gibson, who he knows from Leicester. Glenn Eller did a good job on a couple of tours he's been on, why not pay for him? Or why not go completely left field, take a bloke there for 3 weeks called Ben Ryan?
I think that's great. I think he's employed by the Welsh Tribune, isn't he, Ben?
But well, tough, I think that's out. Good.
And also, he just wrote a great book. I'm not going to go on much further from you guys, but I do think that it's time Elliot Daly was tried at outside centre, even though he's only got three fingers left, apparently. And Jake Cooper-Willie, I've always considered him to be the outstanding tight end prop when fit. And Jake is the sort of guy who gets injuries, but when he does get injuries, he then needs a lot big number of games to come back. But I mean, I just think he's outstanding, and I think we have to find out if Harry Williams has got it, because he's next in line. But my player above all others, I was only there in spirit yesterday because I watched it on TV. One player impressed me fantastically yesterday. He's always been discarded by England as too small, too light, too weak, too feeble. Christian Wade yesterday was absolutely magnificent. He looks to have put on strength. He was brilliant in the air, took every ball as if he was 6'5". He was electric in the broken field, and he reminds me of Shane Williams. Everybody said Shane Williams was too small, but Shane Williams then made himself bigger and broader, almost like a sort of billiard ball. He'd ricochet off people, and I just thought Christian Wade was excellent.
Yeah, Wade was bouncing off people yesterday.
Exactly. And so, there's a few people there. Sam Simmons, I'd like to think, could go, but really, he's got to go away and come back as a flanker, and maybe a real good flanker. So, there's a few in the hat for you.
Can I just throw in Manu's situation? I mean, I just think it's about time that Manu goes into the back row. I think that's his future. I don't think he's got a future in the midfield anymore. His pace isn't there, and he's got to make a call on his career, I think, because to me, he's lost the pace through all the injuries that he's got, and he's a number seven for me.
Right, number seven, Manu Tuilagi.
Okay. Or a six.
Okay.
Could he stand the battering he'd get?
We can carry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his physicality is there. It's just what he doesn't have is that electric pace which made him the player he was when he came, and he's never going to get that back. I've never seen a player with more strapping take to the field than he does now. And I think he's, what is he, 26 now, 27?
And
potentially
again.
Could have five more years, possibly, or if he keeps plugging away doing what he's trying to do at the moment, I don't think he's got a future at the top of the game.
Tuilagi and Vunipola in the England back row.
It's quite mean, isn't it?
Sam been drinking.
Pub's not open yet.
We know where we found those drugs on the way in.
Manu
Openside.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see the I was going to say I can see the point for your point, what you're saying, but actually I can't. Massive weekend of the European Challenge Cup and the European Champions Cup coming up. Four ties in each round, which is what you have in the quarterfinals normally. Let's just go straight to Saracens. They've been big news the last couple of years. This season, big news because they're not anything like what they were. Sam, you were very disparaging about the play itself, the match itself at the stadium on Saturday. But did Saracens show any signs?
Well, I mean, they did enough to put away what, let's admit, is a really, really ordinary Harlequins team. They were fine. They were never going to lose the game. They were 10-0 up after 10 minutes, and Quins never really looked like pushing them at all. Marrow was excellent. Easily his best game of 2018, which makes us ask even more questions about why he was so flat during the Six Nations. And I thought, as I said before, Lazowski was excellent. Midfield functioned pretty well. Bit of a concern over Barrett. He went off right at the end, looked like a concussion, which could cause them a worry for next week. Obviously, they've got their big quarter final against Leinster. You know, there were signs that they were sort of starting to hit form, but it was a really frustrating game on so many levels. Stop start, 13 minutes of added time in the second half. Constant back chat to the referee. I felt really sorry for Foley. He clearly lost his temper by the end, and I didn't blame him at all. Malins was wrongly sin-binned, but he was just fed up, and I think we all are. It was a really frustrating game. Not a good stadium to watch rugby from, I've got to say.
Let's just before we go on from that, Mr. Foley, the referee, I feel sorry for him. Has he not got all the weapons in his disposal to say, shut up, go back 10 yards, shut up, go back 20 yards?
Yeah, fair point. I mean, you just don't see that anymore, do you? You never see them being marched back. It was the thing that the football referees used to sort of look over enviously at rugby referees, that you can march them back, and that is the best way. But it seems to have been this accepted narrative, and I think it works both ways now, that at the same way that referees are trying to sort of commentate their way through the game, players now feel empowered to kind of talk back to them, and then suddenly where's the line, that famous line that's the big talking point in sport now. But you know, it's there's too much chat, there's just too much talking, and it's slowing everything up.
Refs, it's all in your hands. Adam, the news hound, what's the injury news? Because let's be fair, Saracens have been way below strength. Billy Vunipola, no chance of playing?
Well, first of all, Sarah's the only English team I'll give a price of going over there and getting a win. But they are really up against it. So on Saturday, Mike McCall said that he'd virtually written off Billy Vunipola for that game. Obviously, he's been out for a while with his wrist injury. Owen Farrell was sitting in the stands with this thigh injury that he got with England. He's touch and go, apparently. Barrett, as Sam said, George Cruz is struggling. They've got Michael Rhodes is out, Skelton's out. They've both got broken arm. Skelton's got a broken arm. They're having a bit of a mare. I mean, obviously, if Barrett and Farrell are injured, they've still got Lazowski. If Barrett's injured, Lazowski could play 12. They've got a bit of cover there.
Rhodes is a massive loss for Saracens this season.
Absolutely huge.
He was absolutely brilliant for them last year.
And also, he's the player that would he would be available every week, you know.
Alex, Saracens have lost it this year. Massive injuries. They seem to lose it about the time that Claremont postponed game, etc. I think we all know that had they been at their peak, they were a real, real fighting chance. But we're talking about the destruction of the team rather than injuries now. Have they got any chance at all?
I agree with Adam that they have a mentality that would give them a shot at winning over there. But I just think Leinster, with so many of the Ireland team who dominated the Six Nations, coming back in, Stuart Lancaster's done a superb job there. He's got so many of those players on top of their game. I can't see Saracens going over there to win. I think there's a really interesting sort of shift in the balance of power in Europe this year. I mean, Saracens were unbeatable, literally unbeatable in Europe for two seasons. For them to be schooled at home, as you said, by Claremont was mortifying for them, and it showed some cracks in their squad. In one of the other quarterfinals, Claremont are at home. They were impregnable at home at the Marcel Machelin. They're not anymore.
They got thumped on the weekend.
They got thumped at the weekend, but teams are winning in Claremont now, and they were a team who were who never won the big prize, but they were right up there, and now they look a shadow of their former selves.
They do, again, nastily affected by injury. But on the weekend, I was looking forward to the game against Toulon, because Morgan Parra and Camille Lopez were back in the selection shaker. Wesley Fofana and Damien Pennell were back in the centre. So I thought, well, they're on the way. They lost by 48 points, which is bizarre. Sam, we love our trips to Claremont. We're talking about that off air, as we say in broadcasting. But against Racing, now Racing, Claremont are the Neely team. Racing are actually the never ever team, really, despite all the publicity around them. Claremont are going to have to come a long way back from 48 points, but from what we know about them, when they do get home, maybe not impregnable, they can't be ruled out.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, they've got far too much quality throughout the side. But as you say, you know, and Alex makes a good point about Saracens with the mentality. I think now you come down to these knockout stages, you're looking for the teams that've got that sort of pedigree and history of winning, and Racing don't. But you know, Claremont as well, they're been the nearly team for a long time as well. So, you know, there's some big questions to ask. But just before we go on, Steve, what does a selection shaker look like? What is that exactly?
It's when Stuart Lancaster used to have, when you should put all the names in the shaker.
Oh, yeah.
And then pluck them out blindfolded.
Is it plastic or...?
Quite a gold goblet with a red rose.
Oh, okay.
Gold-plated goblet.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
but Lanny's one, you put all the names in and everyone you picked out said Sam Burgess.
That's right. That's another one of my exclusives gone. I'm going to Scarlett's versus La Rochelle on Good Friday. Everyone says we're parochial in Wales, but I'm prepared to go down to see those West Walian bastards. But La Rochelle, 6 weeks ago, would have been favourites. They were top of the table. Now they slipped to fifth. At least Victor Vito's back this week, something I've been suspecting for a long time. And he's the driving force. But Scarlett's have got Welsh internationals dotted all over the place, still on a kind of shoestring budget-wise. Isn't it disastrous that they lose Scott Williams next season to the Ospreys? But I just think that'll be a fantastic occasion, much needed, and both teams attacking, and it'll be a great start to the weekend. Hathers, Munster, Toulon. If you picked a joint team between the two teams, you probably have one Munsterman, 14 Toulon. But if you want to pick a winner, you probably still go for Munster, would you not?
Yeah, you probably would. Toulon, despite their 49-0 win at Claremont on Sunday, they're bang up against it. Munster going quite well in the second tier of the conference, their conference of the Pro 14. And, you know, like the Leinster lads, most of their Irish boys had the weekend off. So they'll be fresh. They won't get flogged around the London Stadium or Welford Road or anywhere else like that.
Scarlett's as well. Rested all players from the Wales squad.
You've got a fancy Munster for that.
OK, Alex, Toulon, we're not quite know where they are at the moment. They've three European trophies on the trot. You knew where they were coming from. Big, experienced veterans there. Not so good now.
I think Fabio Galtier's made a quite positive impact there, and he's actually getting them playing with a style and a system that suits them. I think for a long time, in the kind of the years after Johnny went, they became what they had been, which is a collection of big names with no kind of commitment necessarily to each other. They were just there on a paycheck. I think Galtier has given them some a structure, and he's found in Chris Ashton a fullback that no one knew could play fullback, and it's allowed Ashton to play with a freedom and to pop up on the shoulder, which is his game. So I think they're a unit that's coming together. Whether they're good enough to win the European Champions Cup yet, I'm not sure, but I think they're actually back on the road to being a force again.
Sam, Ireland taking the Grand Slam. Are we thinking that the European Champions Cup may go there as well?
I think a lot of money would be on Leinster for sure. Alex or Adam made the point that so many Irish players within that team, and there's just units within units that are just now so kind of used to playing together. They're used to winning. They're playing at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin, really hard place for everyone to go. I'd have to fancy Leinster.
We're just going to ask you for a prediction, lads. I'll start, but we have a winner plus a points spread. I'm going to go Scarlett's over La Rochelle by 11. I'm going to go Munster over Toulon by 3. I'm going to go Claremont over Racing 92 by 7. And I'm going to go Leinster over Saracens by 11. So let's go around. We'll start off with Scarlett's, La Rochelle. Sam?
Scarlett's by 15.
Alex?
6. Scarlett's by 6.
Adam?
I've got Scarlett's by a dozen.
Munster, Toulon?
Toulon by 3.
Toulon away at Munster. Yeah. Win away at Munster. Alex?
I'm going to say Munster by 3 on the basis of that unity ahead of them.
Very, very tight then. Alex, yeah. Adam?
I've got Munster by 6.
Right, OK. Munster's just scraping there. Claremont Racing, Sam? Racing?
Claremont by 5.
Right. Alex?
Yes, Claremont. Yeah, one score, 7 points.
Right, Claremont Racing.
Yeah, I'm with Arthur there, Claremont by 7.
Right, okay, getting money on everybody from these experts. Leinster Saracens. We all fancy Leinster at the moment.
Yes, yeah. I do.
Okay. Well, I'd love to see Saris win that, but I mean, that'd be better than anything they've done in Europe, I think.
Yeah. That would be one of the great wins of any English team in Europe, I think, if they could pull that off.
Agreed. guys, there's two competitions. There's the Challenge Cup. Sometimes it grabs your attention, sometimes it doesn't. This year it has, frankly, a little bit. Newcastle play Brive on the weekend. Now, Newcastle coming off a win over Northampton. But more than that, just a great occasion. A great effort by their marketing team to get 30,000 in there at St James's Park. Really nice gesture by Veroniki Gonova to wave in Shearer fashion. He's not as bad a pundit as Shearer, but he did wave in Shearer fashion, which was lovely. It's funny because I think it could have gone wrong. They got so much good ball. I thought Toby Flood at fly half was unbelievably pedestrian, and if one of their other younger guys had been there to put some gas on it. Or indeed, if George Ford or Danny Cipriani had played, I think Newcastle would have won by miles. But really, really good feel-good factor for the game, Sam, in the northeast.
Yeah, I mean it's a great story, and you know I totally support, despite how kind of critical I was of the game at the London Stadium. These big occasion games are they're definitely the future. I think we'll come on to a discussion about how much rugby's played and what have you, but you know. Bigger events, fewer games, that's got to be the future for rugby as far as I'm concerned. And that one, that the atmosphere at Newcastle crucially didn't appear, although I wasn't there, but from speaking to people who were there, it wasn't as contrived as it clearly was. And the same way Leicester yesterday, you've got to let these atmospheres build themselves and let the crowds do it themselves rather than force it down their throat. And it looked like a brilliant occasion there, so well done to Newcastle.
Alex, where do you stand on what Sam calls forcing down your throat? Is it slightly old school to think the atmosphere can build itself when you can chat to your mates, etc.?
That is old school because it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, it does. I mean, did it Leicester yesterday, didn't it?
Yeah, it does, but not at big events where there's an expectation among the organisers to generate to try and generate a false atmosphere when you don't necessarily need to, because that then actually has the opposite effect of dampening the natural fervour. There's also at some of the internationals, there's so many corporate issues and responsibilities to get match day pundits sponsored by the local brew and all that kind of stuff. I don't like it, and RFU do lots of research and say that it works. I'm not sure it does. The one thing I would add to what Sam said about Newcastle, that game, 30,000 at St James's Park on the same weekend that the RFU eventually confirmed they're going to take England away from Twickenham. Stephen Brown said after the 2015 World Cup that the case had been made for taking England on the road. Ian Ritchie always refused to even contemplate it on the basis of the money they'd lose from a game at Twickenham, and he wanted to keep his 15,000 debenture holders sweet. Stephen Brown's been a bit more open-minded. He's going to take an England warm-up game next year out of Twickenham, and he wants it to be an annual event. And I think when you see the crowd as buoyant and enjoying their rugby at St James's Park as we did, it shows that it's the right move for the RFU.
Quite right.
because there was rugby, there are big rugby crowds to be attracted outside of Twickenham.
Adam, you never restrict yourself to the M25. You're always up at Newcastle, Sale, Gateshead, even John O'Groats. You're always up there. But what's your view on where England should go now we're talking about it?
I actually covered a couple of games at St James's Park during the World Cup, and it was magic. Of course they should take England out of Twickenham. Ian Ritchie had this big thing, obviously, because of the bottom line. You've got whatever Old Trafford holds, 70,000. You've got 70,000 stadium there. You've got 56,000 one in Newcastle. Why not use them, you know?
Definitely.
It's just bonkers. I mean, I've got mates who come to Twickenham. They'd have to take a mortgage out to get the train down. We live up north, you know. It's bonkers.
Exactly. Take the team to the fans, not vice versa. Newcastle playing Brive. Brive have improved lately. They were in bottom place, but must be a magnificent chance for Newcastle to get to the semis. Connaught, Gloucester. Alex, Gloucester away at Connaught. Normally you'd think Gloucester would have enough, but still bafflingly can't quite make that extra yard, can they?
No, they can't. I think when Ackerman came in at the start of the season, he looked like he made a big impact quickly. Then they went off their game, then they came roaring back. And I think they're still trying to work out how they want to be under him. I don't think they have the consistency to... I wouldn't back their consistency to go over to Connor in the conditions that you always have to put up with there and win. I'd go home win on that one.
Sam, I know you've been following Edinburgh closely under
very
Richard Cockerell.
So, yeah.
Edinburgh played the Blues, both teams amazingly, on a long winning run. So this could be the time when at least one of them validates themselves as a concept and as a team.
Well, it's about time, isn't it?
It's
only been going for about 47 years, but Cockerell's definitely made a difference. I thought he would when he went up there, and he's been a sort of breath of fresh air. And I'd fancy Edinburgh to push on this year and probably make the final.
Yeah, Steve, what about the other quarterfinal, Pau, Stade Francais?
Yes, I'm just come on to Adam about that.
Yep.
Adam, Pau, do you think they've got enough?
Well, very interesting facts about this game. The Romanian referee who refereed Belgium Spain was down to ref it and has just been taken off. So. Thanks, okay. Arthur.
Poe, front row, meet with your approval.
Yeah, they're big, mean, physical set forwards.
Big guys, aren't they? They're
huge. And they're number 1, 2, and 3, I think, there as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Locks are big as well.
Yeah, they are big, And the backs are fast.
Back-rising.
Yeah, they are. Two more clubs you should mention. First of all, congratulations to Leicester. At half-time, you would have thought there's no way they were going to win that, but then they came back to do it on a surge of adrenaline, and also to Sale, completely murdered Worcester Warriors. And I think we've said on this podcast before, I almost said postcard, I just really do fear for Worcester under their current regime. But Mike Haley and Sale, absolutely wonderful. And it's nice, is it not, lads, just to be back in the club scene after all that?
Yesterday at Welford Road was just brilliant.
Yeah.
There were mistakes, there were blown tries, that makes a game. It wasn't prescripted. It wasn't. They weren't playing off structures. It was. They were having a go. They were. It was counter attacking. There were tries. There was drama from start to finish.
Was it sold out? Full house.
Full house.
24,000.
Yeah. Sun was shining. It was just.
It was
a brilliant occasion. And Wasps should have won it. They had so many chances to win it. They couldn't kill Leicester off. Matt Tate's try-saving tackle on Dan Robson was one of the great tackles.
That really was. I mean, that was. I can't remember a better cover tackle. I mean, we saw the lad in the England game.
Underhill's
tackle against Wales was unbelievable, but very different. This was just pure pace, angles of running.
And the execution of the tackle
exactly,
when he got there.
Just to hit. He didn't have a split second. He had to make that call right there, and it was just one of the great tackles.
He's one of Jones' favourite players over the last decade.
Should have had 100 caps by now.
Yeah. I've always wrote him. So there are some people who don't know much about the game who've always knocked him, but he'd be tremendous. Look, it's great to be back at Club Rugby. I actually was at Chinner Club on Saturday watching a game, and I loved it far more than most internationals.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Slightly more serious note about club rugby now, but not only club rugby. We're going to talk about injuries. And if you read some of the outpourings at Twickenham, you only get injured playing or training with your clubs, never with England, despite the severity alleged of their coaching sessions. Sorry, guys, you get injured in any form of rugby, wherever you are, and it's not always someone else who causes them, or it's not always some other environment where you get injured. On the weekend, we loved it. What we didn't love was four people going off, Sam, on Friday evening at Bath. At least three looked serious injuries. Henry Thomas was holding his arm. Four more yesterday at the Tigers. We've been told that we mustn't be anecdotal about these injuries, but what more powerful anecdotes do you want than eight people going off in two games?
Yeah, I mean, where do you start with this? I think we've all written a lot about this issue, which, despite what the RFU have said for years and years and years, it's just clear in front of our very eyes that the game has got more intense, the collisions are bigger, the boys have never been more committed, and girls, I'll add, but this is obviously a study about the men's game. I think one of the comments of all the kind of people I've spoken to that sort of stuck in my mind most was, I went down to see Wayne Pivac, the Scarlets director of rugby, at the start of the season, and he said he was a traffic cop back in Auckland, and he says he sees injuries now amongst his players that he used to see in road traffic accidents back in New Zealand. And that, you know, we're talking about torn pectoral muscles, biceps being taken off the bone, hamstrings off the bone, you know, absolutely savage injuries. And the game has to address it, and it's, we've got to look it in the eyes and say, this is a sport we all love. We all love the physicality of it. No one wants to stop rugby being a tough, hard, attritional game, but we're going to have to accept that as the evolution of professionalism carries on, then we're going to have to change and alter and protect these players, because they're so committed, they're earning a living, they need protecting from themselves, and you know, the sport's just only starting to really come to terms with this, I think.
We'll come back to Sam in a minute. Alex, Adam, yourself and I have just come from listening to a briefing from the RFU and from PRL about basically what they were telling us is, I think, that they now got for a massive evidence-based injury survey, and from that they're going to try and change or hopefully influence safety at the tackle, concussion, and they did say finally that rates of serious injury are rising, as if we needed statistics for that. What did you make? I know that it's only just happened, and you'll be it'll all be in the Times tomorrow. But what did you make of what the points they were trying to make?
Injury survey, which has been published about 3 months later than usual, showed a rise in training injuries, a rise in match injuries, and an increase in injuries on artificial pitches as opposed to grass pitches. And for the first time, those levels have risen above what had always been outlined as the acceptable high level. They've now broken that ceiling. The reason that I believe that the publication was 3 months late was because they felt the need to act, and they've published an 8-point plan looking at various parts of the game, from another study into artificial pitches, even though they've been used in Premiership for years, and as Sam points out, they've been rolled out in the community game.
£47 million of investment, the RFU.
And that's an ongoing investment, Sam. £47 million, about something they might just find is too dangerous?
Well, I mean, why weren't these studies done before they rolled out that investment? I mean, we sat there and spoke to our few representatives at Maidenhead Rugby Club, I believe, a couple of years ago, and it was sort of blank faces looked back at us. And again, this anecdotal evidence, supposedly, which is actually, you could also say, speaking to the people who actually play on these, which we do, which a lot of these people on these studies don't actually do, is speak to the players, and they will tell you, professional players will tell you, that they are more concerned about getting injured on artificial pitches, and they're the guys who are actually doing it.
Well, one of the themes that I picked up on this conference call was stated repeatedly by Simon Kemp, who, official title, he's the head of medicine at the RFU, was it kept going on about world rugby and the law changes and the unintended consequences of those law changes. A lot of us were called for scaremongering earlier this season when we were reporting that the law change had led to higher ball and play time, more phases, more tackles, and therefore more injuries. That will be contained in next year's report, but Simon Kemp confirmed that there's been a 10% increase in that, so inevitably there will be an increase in injuries in next year's report, in my view. He also talked about the height of the tackle. I think there appeared to be a consensus from those who put this report together that World Rugby need to lower the legal height of the tackle.
But they couldn't even give us a suggestion to where it should be lowered.
They don't have an idea exactly where they want it to.
your a lot of your work in life recently has been basically not so much covering the game as following up injuries. I mean, can you ever remember there being a rash of serious injuries like it? We're talking about Saracens possibly having eight people missing for a big game.
Yeah, we've got to find out about at least half a dozen later on today for tomorrow's papers. Guess what? You know, breaking news. Blokes are getting bigger, smashing into people more often. More of them get hurt. Mm. Go figure.
I'm afraid I was almost too angry to speak, and in fact, I didn't ask any questions at the briefing today because they keep on skirting round the edges for me. Because the tackle, there are now so many breakdowns. It goes smash, 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 smash. I did my own statistics, and I picked a test match 10 years ago, and there were four times as many tackles, and not only. Tackles, but double tackles. Mm. But of course, they don't actually say anything to do with that. They don't actually say, look, we've got to be really radical. Sam, are we still going around the fringes here? Mm. And sort of almost, you know, it's like having a haircut, but you only cut a bit off the top.
Well, it feels like it's just Groundhog Day, isn't it? Every year we report if there's a small incremental rise in this, that, or the other. I mean, there's some easy wins as far as I can see. I think we have to radically rethink the way the guys train. I think if you get to that level of the sport, you don't need to be toughened up during the week. Okay, I admit there's a degree that you need to be prepared physically to go onto the pitch, but incidents of training injuries are highest ever recorded. 33 days on average lost to training ground injuries. Most common injury in training, concussion. These guys are smashing each other's heads in training. What is that about? You know, I appreciate we can't copy everything that the NFL does, but there are clear rules, contractual rules in place where players are limited to the amount of contact training they do. It's a massive amount less than in rugby union. The exposure to coaches, there are so many coaches now who all want their two penneth at every single level, strength and conditioning, attack coaches, defence coaches. Limit the amount of exposure the players have, and they have to look at radically reducing the amount of games these guys play. I'm absolutely convinced about that. And how they go about it, we've got to look at that as well, but it's a big concern for the sport. There's no doubt about that.
And also, they made a big point, the RFU, of saying, there are people this morning that it's almost like the community game is different, and they got separate service. Well, actually, that's not what I'm worried about. Community game, they kind of look after themselves. What I'm worried about is, and this is speaking to someone who's coached at Colts level or senior school level for 20 years, is parents, grandparents, mums, dads, sisters coming, seeing that stuff on TV and thinking, God, my son's got to go down. And obviously, it doesn't happen like that, but it is not a pretty sight. It really isn't. Hath is any solutions? But do you think that this insistence on facts and figures and surveys is slightly patronising to those of us who've spoken to players and actually get as decent a sort of comeback on how fierce the game is than any statistics?
Well, exactly, and the sort of people who go to two or three games a week actually speak to these players. Which player is on a good contract is going to come out and say, oh, by the way, you can put this in the paper, I'm training too hard, I'm absolutely knackered. No one's going to say that. I mean, Sam's thing about reducing training and everything sounds brilliant. How are you going to police it? You send a bloke around with a big stick and say, no, Lester, you're not going to have your Tuesday morning punch-up this week.
Well, is it a crisis, and is it almost, as the rates go up and the players go off holding their arms, legs, whatever, is it becoming incredibly worrying now?
I think it is. I put that question to the panel. I suggested that they must be alarmed by what they found in order to put these action points in place, and there was a sort of some of them accepted that this was, they're acting because they are concerned by what they find. But when I asked whether it was phrase I use, unacceptable, and they sort of said, well, they backed away from it. And so, well, it's just, this is the data, we have to see it over a longer period of time. I'm not sure. I think their eyes have been opened by the results here, because for the first time it's broken through the ceiling of what they deem to be acceptable.
Sure, exactly.
What they're not prepared to do is extrapolate from this that there could be a crisis down the line. They're trying to see it as a one-off.
Let me just talk about newspaper a second. We've just seen the ball tampering in Australia, where basically it was uncovered by media and really, really newspapers, Aussie and England, have really got stuck in, which makes me proud of newspapers. And what also makes me proud, and I'm not going to make it, there's no joke involved here, is Sam's role as basically the conscience of the sport when it comes to concussion. He's fought an incredibly tenacious, long, effective campaign, and he's wound people up, which is exactly what we are there to do. Sam, concussion, things are improving. Is there where do we have to travel next in the battle to keep players safe from concussion and its after effects?
Well, thanks for those words. I might well up and cry now, Jonesy, but it's where do we go? Police it properly, actually make sure that things like when Kian Healy is clearly showing signs of concussion, that he's then taken off, and if he isn't taken off, then there are repercussions rather than just flim-flam statements from governing bodies and unions saying everything's fine, nothing to see here. That's the world we used to live in. Now that we understand and beginning to understand the sort of potential long-term consequences of concussion, it's not a joke anymore. It's not like Lewis Moody told us once that they used to sit on the touchline at Welford Road and laugh at each other at how doolally they'd gone when they were sat having had their head knocked off. You know, it's a really serious issue. You're never going to eradicate it from the sport. No one's naive enough to say that rugby isn't a high contact game where blokes are going to get hurt, but start policing it properly. That head injury assessment, in principle, I wanted to support it. It was a great sort of idea, but it's worthless if there are no consequences. And time and time again, George North at Northampton with Wales, Healy's the most recent one in people's consciousness, Morgan Parra earlier this season. If there are no consequences for a complete and utter failure to implement that head injury assessment protocols correctly, it's totally worthless. And that's where I'd like to see the move to.
Adam, Sam's making a big point there. We're not referring now to any case which he mentioned there, but are we at the stage now where coaches are so massive and so powerful that they actually are going to override the evidence of their eyes and even override the opinion of their medical people?
Yes, in a word, their job's on the line. It's wrong, but it does happen, and we can probably think of a few instances without naming them when it has happened. The coach is the top dog at the club, and what he says goes.
Alex, we have made some progress. I mean, when I was playing, when you were playing, it was the old how many fingers have I got up and all that. And you say if you got it within four, they'd say fair enough. If you were playing these days, would you be anxious? And where do you think we still got ground to make up?
I would be anxious, and I've heard, again anecdotally, but stories below the Premiership. Where there isn't an HIA process of players being told to carry on or being sent back on, and that bothers me because that's much harder to police.
Yeah.
And at the top level, there are, I don't know, 30 cameras at a game, 20 cameras at a game. There are medics, independent medics. There are doctors. They should be getting it right. There is a mechanism there. There are things that might be going wrong, but you can see how it could be fixed. Mm. What bothers me not that far below the Premiership, I hear stories of players who are made to carry on or feel obliged to carry on for their team when it should be recognised and removed. And I think that's much harder to police. So that does bother me. And one of the other areas that concerns me from this conference call today, inevitably the RFU and the Premiership say that there's great collaboration between strength and conditioning coaches and fitness coaches between the club and country, because that's part of this partnership that supposedly set up. But when you actually see it in practice and you talk to the England head coach who says, I get the players in and they're not ready for Test rugby, I need to make them fitter for Test rugby. So he then puts them through his England programme because he doesn't believe that the programmes they get at the clubs make them ready for England. Now, the clubs aren't there to prepare players for England, but if they've got a partnership, then they should be working much
Absolutely.
More closely together.
What a good point.
And the very fact that the delegates on this panel say they are doesn't actually provide us with much evidence that they are. And when we talk to coaches and players about playing at club rugby and then moving into Test rugby, suggest there needs to be much closer collaboration.
Very good point. Just leave the last word to Sam. Sam, there's a rash of concussions at the moment, some of which we think are being picked up, some which are ignored. Do you think there's a chance that in the future, say 20 years' time, we're going to look back at this time and think, God, we've let so many people down here because people are going to be having major, major problems in later life?
Brian O'Driscoll articulated it brilliantly a couple of years ago. He said this group of players are effectively guinea pigs because we don't know the consequences of playing the sport to this level of physicality, this level of commitment, and with this number of injuries. And, you know, I'd rather in 20 years' time say we overreacted and took too many precautions to try and protect them than we didn't do enough. And I think the danger of all these kind of, you know, little chips around the edges rather than radical change is that's what we're looking at, that's what we're staring down the barrel. And I think Alex hit the absolutely sweet spot there just by talking about the tensions that the players are under between where they're pulled in different directions and they're effectively been trying to peak at different stages throughout the season, and those strength and conditioning coaches are all on at them, and they all basically want them to peak at completely different times. And someone who will remain nameless, but he'll know who he is if he's listening to this, showed me a chart once. He's a very important guy actually, and it was just a series of up and down sort of curves on a graph, and he placed one of them and said, this is the England strength and conditioning, this is where they need to peak. And he placed another graph down, and it was the club strength and conditioning, and this is where they need to peak. And the peaks were exactly in between each other all the way through the year. Throw a Lions trip in, who've all got their own strength and conditioning coach, and you've got another peak which goes across the top in the middle, and it just doesn't work at the moment. And they are being asked to play too much rugby and be basically peaking all the way through the year, and the only time they get to rest is when they're seriously injured.
Adam, the final word. Are there two sports now? In the old days, and we've just paid tribute to the late Michael Green and the Art of Course Rugby, where everything seemed to be one big family, but are there now two massively different sports where you've got this absolute elite, almost savage arena, and everybody else toddling around like they always did?
Yeah, of course there are. And as you alluded to earlier, the sport that people see on telly is not what their kids are going to go and play at Hackney Rugby Club on a Saturday afternoon. But seeing that on the telly might put them off going down there. And of course, they're two totally different sports now.
Thank you for bearing with us today. We felt that we had to do that. It's a time when levity is appropriate and time when it isn't. And all you guys out there, men and women, boys and girls who are involved, I'm sure you feel the same concerns. Rugby is a fantastic game, a fantastic brotherhood. At least it did have great ethics. Maybe it's slightly departing from those. But I'm sure you all agree we have to keep it as safe as houses, safe as we possibly can. And as Sam says there, if you go too far one way, well, we're going to have to put up with that till we get it all back into balance. Thank you very much for listening to The Ruck. Thank you for downloading us. We'll be back next week. Thanks a million.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.